on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com. And for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, June 25th, 2025 edition. And we are here this hour to help you become a better investor to navigate these very interesting times that we are in. And each day brings its own challenges as well as opportunities. And our job is to usher you through these challenges with the right mindset so that you can consistently make good decisions with your money, right? To avoid the emotions, the fear and the greed, getting caught up in the headlines and the social media posts and the political polarization that we find ourselves in, and really rise above that and focus on the facts and the likely outcomes going forward for industries, asset classes, companies, etc. And those are, the market doesn't care. The market doesn't care what you think or what I think. The market cares about what is. And so what we're trying to figure out is, once again, what is likely? You're never going to be right 100% of the time. You're going to make mistakes. We all do. We all handicap things the wrong way from time to time. But it's about putting the odds in your favor. And that's what we're here to do. And we do that by bringing you data and perspective so that you can take this back to your own personal situation and make better decisions. And if you want direct insights into your situation, give us a call. That's what we do as well. We answer your finance and investment questions that you leave on our 24-hour voice bank, 8899 chart. Or maybe you leave a question over on our YouTube channel. Maybe you leave us a question via a review on iTunes. We'd love that as well. So there's a lot of ways to get your questions into us, and we will do our best to answer them as timely as we can. So that's what this hour is going to be about. It's what every hour on Invest Talk is about. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
I am calling about Power Solutions, ticker PSIS. Do you think it's a good company and now it's a good time to invest? Or do you think it's overvalued and ran up too much? Thank you. Bye.
PSIX is the symbol. And this is a $1.4 billion market cap company. It's come a long, long way. For years, it didn't make money. And then it started making money in 2022, but really didn't break out until last year, about a year ago. And that's when it was trading around $2 per share. Now it's trading at $61 per share. So you can see that it has had quite the run. Okay, and let's see what it does. It manufactures, distributes, and services power systems that run on non-diesel fuels, including natural gas, propane. Ah, okay. And this kind of dovetails into our main focus point, which is how gas is powering AI, natural gas. And so this is very interesting. Okay, so I like the space that it's in. The big question is has gone too far too fast, right? So free cash flow right now is about $48 million. It has leveled out though. In fact, in first quarter of last year, free cash flow is about $75 million. Earnings look to also be leveling out. Earned $2.81 last year. This year's supposed to earn $3.01. So 7% growth, good, but not incredible. Next year, 6% growth, $3.20. No dividend. Let's take a look if they have any debt. I don't think they do. Yeah, not minor, about $10 million in debt. Nothing crazy there. I have no issue with this. I kind of like it. It's not expensive, not cheap either. The technicals look fine. And so I'm going to give this one a thumbs up. Certainly high risk because it's just started to really make money, but I like the place that it's in. It's a bit overbought now, obviously a pretty decent reversal today. Looks probably ready for a pullback, but if this can pull back to $45, $46 per share from the mid-60s right now or low-60s right now, I think that would be a good place to pick up PSIX, Power Solutions International. Thanks for the call. Now, it's Wednesday, June 25th, and we are here during this hour to hit our focus point mainly, which is how natural gas is powering the AI data center boom. And while long term, you might have nuclear, might have traditional renewables, etc., the demand for electricity is now. And so natural gas is emerging as quick, reliable, and cost effective. And so we'll dig into that story and a bit more on today's show. We also will touch on gold. Gold is now the second largest global reserve asset. It surpassed the euro last year. What does that mean? Why is that happening? We'll talk about that. And then banks. It looks more and more like we're going to have continued consolidation in the banking industry. And so we'll look at that story as well as commercial real estate. What type of vulnerabilities is it going to cause within the financial system? Okay. So we'll look at that. We also have voice bank questions on fractional shares as well as United Steel, symbol X. We also have questions that came in via our comments section over on our YouTube channel. Of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions right now, live 4 to 5 Pacific time every weekday at 8 and 8:99 sharp. But if you're listening after hours on our podcast, YouTube, etc., that's fine. You can always leave your question on that same number, 8 and 8:99 chart. We will answer it on a future show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at InvestTalkStore.com. And now Justin Klein is here and taking your finance and investment questions live. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Let's go look at the market today. It was a decidedly red day, and it might not look like it. The S&P was basically flat on the day, mainly held up, though, by a strong day from NVIDIA as well as Google. But names like Tesla down 4%, Microsoft, Meta, Apple, Amazon, not doing a whole lot on the day, but certainly a lot of red in consumer staples, utilities, industrials, etc. And this is really on the back of economic data that continues to disappoint. The Citi Economic Surprise Index fell to the lowest level since September. And consumer confidence in the labor market has dropped to the lowest level since March of 2021. And this is on the back of initial jobless claims, continuous claims that are holding near levels, highest levels in 3 or 4 years. And as long as that continues, we're going to get more of that data tomorrow, by the way. We're going to get a lot of economic data tomorrow. Today we had new home sales. Tomorrow we get existing home sales. And new home sales disappointed as well. That was 623,000. Estimates were 690,000. So that missed big time. And well down from the already downwardly revised number from April, which is 722,000. So 100,000 less homes were sold in May than April. And that just goes back to the labor market, right? What has changed? Really, mortgage rates are still around 7%. So it's not like mortgage rates drove down the demand for new homes. It's really about people getting new jobs, feeling comfortable in their jobs to go out and buy a home. And some people are obviously getting laid off, and that's hurting the demand on that side as well. So clearly the housing market is starting to have another leg lower along with the labor market. And we also get Friday, we have the PCE number, which is something the Fed really follows. CPI is not a great measure, frankly, of inflation. PCE is much better. There are other measures that really give us a clear indication of what's happening with inflation. If you look at things like the services PMI, ISM services PMI index over the past couple of months, that's also been flashing stagflationary signals. And this is, 70% of the economy is services, 70 plus. And so that is the most important kind of broad report on the economy. And it's been flashing a stagflationary environment, higher input costs, higher prices, as well as weakening demand, new orders, et cetera. So we're starting to see a lot of the hard data filter in that is, once again, pushing that Citi Economic Surprise Index to the lowest level since September. So I think that's why mid caps and small caps were down today, because they are more economically sensitive to the United States. And those were not doing too hot today. You had Bitcoin futures up, WTI up about 1% after being down 13% over the first 2 days of the week. Treasuries were a bit stronger, so rates were down, and the expectations of a rate cut from the Fed are increasing. Probably not in July, although potentially it depends how bad this labor market report is next week, right? We have the non-farm payrolls report. I'm not sure if they're coming out with it on 4th of July, because that's on Friday, but it's coming out next week. So that'll give a lot more clarity to what's happening in the labor market for the month of June. And that's really bad. I could see them maybe cutting rates in July, but most likely it's going to be in September, especially that'll give the Fed a bit more time to study inflation. So even if the labor market does weaken materially and reports show that, there's still a lot to be understood about the impacts of tariffs on inflation, and the Fed has really talked a lot about that. So I think that will continue. Gold finished up 0.4%, so down decent yesterday, but holding major support and still remains an asset under broad accumulation. And so that was the market today. It looked flat, but underneath the surface, poor breadth and definitely in negative territory. Let's go pivot over to a call from Chris in Maine, looking at Cameco CCJ.
Yeah, hey, Justin. Thanks, as always, for taking my call. I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit about Cameco. I've owned it for quite a while, as I know you guys have as well. I actually sold about 30% of my holdings at 58, thinking it was a pretty unsustainable jump, and now here we are in the 70s, not long later. So I was just wondering what you guys... Are you still just holding for right now, or are you guys trimming it all?
Yeah, we're still holding nuclear. We think it will continue to have a renaissance, and this is the most liquid way to play the space. Now, it's been overbought, probably needs to cool off a little bit, but I think it will continue to be a great place to have core. It's a core holding, right? It's a core. If you want nuclear exposure, this is one of the cleanest, most liquid ways to play the upside of not only the price of uranium, but also Westinghouse. So they bought Westinghouse at a bankruptcy, and that if you're talking about deploying nuclear facilities throughout the world, especially here in the United States, then Westinghouse is a good way to get exposure there. So it's I have no reason to cut it significantly. Now, when it gets overbought like this, can it be prudent to take a few chips off the table? Sure. But I don't think there's any reason to wholesale sell it or take it down to a small percentage of your portfolio. I would continue to hold it. Now, we're going to a break. Still to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now on InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this topic, how natural gas is powering the AI data center boom. And we know that AI and cloud data centers are expanding rapidly. And that means the demand for energy to power those data centers continue to grow. And this is actually a contentious issue in a lot of states that are housing these data centers, places like West Virginia and that area, Georgia. And what's happening is it is putting so much pressure on the grid, and the cost of electricity is going up, and a lot of that's borne by the consumer. And because these utility companies, their profits are regulated in, and you know they can hike rates when their grid is pressured. And so in order to kind of get around this issue, a lot of these companies are either partnering with the utility companies directly to get that power, centering them near nuclear power plants, for example, or they are actually buying and placing gas turbines on site. And this is happening with actually xAI, so Elon's AI company. And now they bought a bunch of these turbines, gas turbines, and they actually didn't go through regulatory approval. So there's actually a big problem with that. I forgot what state it was in, but that's one issue. Obviously, most other companies are actually going through the regulatory process to make sure that you're not too close to city centers and the pollution, because there's still natural gas is cleaner, but it still puts off dangerous gases still that you don't want to breathe. So it can't be too close and to these city centers. So that's one issue with xAI. But a lot of these other companies are still using the same model to connect to existing natural gas lines, but creating their own mini power plants. Once again, using these gas turbines. And so this is increasing dramatically the demand for natural gas. And it's helping them bridge the gap between the current limitations of the electric grid and their energy requirements, and waiting for, you know, nuclear and renewable power to be built out. But right now, natural gas is inexpensive. It's abundant, especially here in the United States. And that's one real competitive advantage we have domestically is that just truly abundant natural gas. Now, this is one reason why I'm generally bullish on natural gas, is because there's starting to become more and more applications for natural gas. It's quickly over the last decade plus has usurped coal. Coal has become obviously a dirty word, but also with cheap natural gas, it really didn't make sense to use coal in most applications. And so natural gas continues to be in high demand, obviously, if we're reshoring some manufacturing, and that's going to increase the demand on the electric grid. And so this is just the kind of the swing fuel now. Everyone talks about oil and oil prices. They're important, and they're important to the cost of living and the feed into inflation. But, you know, we don't use oil the same way as we did 30, 40 years ago, right? Cars are more efficient, and, you know, we're driving less per person because, you know, a lot of people working from home, et cetera. But we're still using a lot of electricity, way more than we have, but not only on the commercial side, but as individuals as well, because we're charging our phones and our devices, and we have all these things plugged in that we didn't used to have, you know, 40, 50 years ago. And so demand for electricity just continues to power to the upside, pun intended. And these data centers, like I said, are directly piping in natural gas and bypassing the traditional electric grid. So this is the way you want to look at the energy space, is that in a lot of cases, it's not about oil. Some of the best companies, the best energy exposure out there, or say carbon energy exposure that you can go gain access to, are actually these natural gas companies, the ones that are predominantly producing natural gas because of these applications. Whereas oil, you know, it's been around for a long time. There's a lot of legacy projects that continue to pump oil, but there's not really the same type of demand growth for oil as there has been in the past. So if you're looking for, once again, a carbon energy company, then you want to focus on those that are leaning more towards natural gas production and sale. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story: how U.S. tariffs on China boost Mexican exports and employment. Tariffs on Chinese goods in 2018 and 2019 led to a surge in Mexican exports to the U.S. and created new job opportunities, particularly benefiting traditionally disadvantaged groups in Mexico's workforce and through trade diversion effects. Okay, so we'll look at that. You know, how do companies kind of get around tariffs by not necessarily reshoring all their manufacturing domestically, but to local markets. So that story is tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
'25 rolls on, and you've got finance and investment questions for Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is Ray from Illinois. Very much appreciate the podcast and everything you teach your listeners. I have a question about fractional shares. A lot of the online brokers are advertising fractional shares. And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares? Just thinking in terms of investing in round dollar amounts as opposed to specific number of shares when buying and selling stocks. If you could let me know, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Put simply, no, there's not really any downside unless there's some additional costs for the broker. I haven't seen that. I don't see that. I think it's just a feature they've rolled out where you can buy fractional shares. Now, I don't know how they do that kind of behind the scenes, but yeah, I think it's a great way to gain exposure to companies that, especially if you don't have a small dollar amount and you can't afford, you know, especially from a diversification standpoint. It used to be, if it's a $10,000 account and I go buy a company that's trading for $1,000 per share, and there's plenty out there, and a lot of them are cheap, even though they look $1,000 per share, you might sounds like a lot, but remember, it's always in relation to earnings and cash flows, et cetera. So, you know, they have to buy one share and that might be 10% of the portfolio, and that might be too much. Now you can buy fractional shares, buy 0.1% of a share, and now that's only $100. Now it's reasonable as a percentage of the overall portfolio. So I think it's great. I think it's outside of free trades, it's probably the next best thing the brokerage community has rolled out over the last, you know, 5-10 years or so, is the ability to buy fractional shares. I've see no downside to it. at least from my point of view. And it's a good way to kind of accumulate shares, companies you might like, and not have to worry about it getting becoming too much of your portfolio. So great question, and hope that helps. Let's go take a live call. Jay from Ohio looking at General Mills. Oh, sorry, Dave from Ohio looking at General Mills, GIS.
Hi, Justin. Hey, do you feel the dividend is safe? I know it's a downward motion, and it's they've been losing market shares. But do you feel the 5.5% dividend is safe at this time?
Put simply, no, I don't. I think General Mills is a classic value trap. Everyone knows their brands, Cheerios, all the cereals. They have yogurt brands. I believe, what was it, Dannon? Let's see, Betty Crocker, Blue Buffalo, Haagen-Dazs, Nature Valley, etc. Tons of large brands. Problem is, debt. Said this many times. When you have a lot of debt, it doesn't matter how good your brand is. If you're losing your cash flow is declining, earnings are declining. It is, you know, the stewardship of the brands here is just not good. And frankly, this is a business that is becoming less and less popular. You know, there's younger generations don't want to buy this stuff. They don't want to buy packaged foods. You know, they want fresh foods, or they want, smaller niche brands, organic brands. They see these brands as old and unhealthy, and people don't want to buy them. And that's why you saw last quarter revenues were down 3%, earnings were down 27%. The quarter before that, revenues were down 5% year over year, earnings were down 15% year over year. And this year, earnings are expected to be down 6%. And guess what? That is declining in its expectations as well. So, you know, analysts continue to see earnings headed lower. And now, while I think they'll probably pay their dividend in the short term, I don't think it's going to cut like imminently or anything like that. I just think the broader trends in the industry and for this stock, right? There's a reason it's struggling dramatically. The market is starting to price in an increasing likelihood that General Mills is just headed for bankruptcy. Now, it doesn't look like in the short term. It's probably not going to file for bankruptcy this year, maybe not even next year. But when you have just continued deterioration in the business and you have a lot of debt, it's going to struggle. And this is not the type of name that you want to own. This is a classic value trap down, what, another 4% today, a new 52-week low. Let me look here at a weekly chart. Yeah, I mean, this is, I got to go to a monthly chart to find the last time General Mills traded at these levels. It hasn't traded at these levels since 2020, okay? And this is below the 200-month moving average. I think this is a classic value trap. I would not own it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now, let's talk about gold. And there's a recent report coming from the European Central Bank, and it shows that the gold has overtaken the euro as the world's second most important reserve assets for central banks, driven by record purchases and obviously prices going up. Gold accounted for 20% of global official reserves last year, so this is the end of 2024. And the euro is now down to 16% of global reserves. The dollar assets, at 46% of global reserves. So still about half of what dollar assets are. But central banks continue to buy at record paces. Central banks, for the third year in a row, acquired more than 1,000 tons of gold last year. That's a fifth of total annual production and twice the annual amount in the decades of the 2010s. And now we're starting to get back to levels that we haven't seen since the 1960s. Central bank gold reserves peaked at 38,000 tons in the mid-1960s. Then we went off the gold standard for the US dollar in the early 70s. And now we're back to 36,000 tons as of the end of last year. So we're almost back to peak, which was mid-1960s. The largest buyers, India, China, Turkey, and Poland. Now last year, the price of gold was up 30%, and it's already up 27% this year. So you add record buying on top of two back-to-back great years for the price, and that adds up to a huge chunk of the central bank's asset pools as in gold. And investors are starting to look at gold not as a hedge against inflation. That's what it used to be. Gold's a hedge against inflation. No. Now it's the ultimate safe, highly liquid asset. And it's not exposed to counterparty risk or sanctions. And that's really the story here. Ever since the start of the Ukraine war and the fact that the US just decided we're going to confiscate Russia's assets. We don't like what they're doing. So we are going to confiscate their treasuries, their dollar-denominated assets, anything that's within the SWIFT system, etc. Other countries have taken notice, especially those that are not U.S. allies, or traditional U.S. allies. And they're saying, hey, why are we putting money in the dollar, putting assets in the dollar? Let's go buy gold. That is becoming the de facto reserve asset. And a survey among 57 central banks that were holding gold last year said that their concerns were sanctions, expected changes in the monetary system, and a desire to become less dependent on the dollar. Those are the main drivers of continuing to buy more and more gold, especially those countries geopolitically close to China and Russia. And then on top of that, investors are starting to look at this as a hedge against political risk and geopolitical risk. So, you know, it's clear that this is a new era. It's a new regime for gold that was ushered in after we confiscated the assets of Russia during the initial invasion of Ukraine. So that is a huge story. That's a big reason why I think the durability of the bull market in gold remains. And it's until really these central banks shift gears or they've had enough, right? But I'm not seeing that. I don't see any incentive for them to slow down, to change. It's all going to all those assets that used to go into the dollar, thinking that, hey, we want deep liquid asset pool. They're less focused on that. They're more focused on the stability of the assets that they are owning and the lack of connection to the United States and our sanctions. There's another question submitted through our online web form over on investtalk.com. Tyson says, what is your current assessment of Lulu? I'm considering adding more to my port position at these levels. I love the company and its products. I know the tariffs have heavily influenced the company's earnings estimates. That being said, this recent pullback seems like a good buying opportunity in the $230 range. Would love to hear your thoughts. Well, this is a name I've actually been looking at over the past couple of, let's call it last year, after it dropped from a high around 500. It was way overpriced then. That was early 2024. And then it fell recently to a low around 230. And I was thinking about buying it. We ended up didn't fire on it. And then it quickly moved up to around $400 per share. At that point, it was overvalued, especially compared to roughly $14 it earned last year. So, you know, I wasn't going to pay a 30 multiple for something like that, roughly. And I wanted something that was more discounted. And now it is. It's down to 230. It's down back down to those levels, and it's trying to find support here. But the more I've studied this name and the trends within this industry, the less I've liked it. Mainly because, I don't know about you, if you go talk to, go look at what the younger generation is wearing. And you tell me how many of them are buying tight-fitted clothing. You know, it used to be, you know, athleisure wear, and it's still a thing. It's still popular. Problem is, it's becoming less popular. And there's more competition. There's especially more competition for from online brands. Obviously, I think there. I remember when the tariffs started, and the Chinese factories came out on TikTok and said, "Hey, you can go buy a Lululemon leggings for $5 directly from this site." As opposed to, you know, $100 at a Lululemon store. And I'm just seeing not a lot of great trends that are going to hold Lulu's business up at this level of profitability. Now, I think there'll still be a leader for a long time. I still think that the athleisure, there still will be a segment of demand there, especially, you know, those that maybe grew up over the last 20 years. Now they're in their maybe late 30s, 40s, 50s, and they still love their athleisure wear. And I think that there's going to be that segment. Problem is that I think the younger generation doesn't have that excitement for these type of brands, that type of athleisure wear. And it's you're seeing that in the profitability. Earnings are actually supposed to be flat this year, up 8% next year. But if I go over to... I'm pulling up my FactSet database here, and I'm looking at earnings trends from earnings history. And recently, as of March, it was supposed to earn $15.38 this year. Now it's down to $14.62. It's declining. It's been on a decline really for a little while now. And I'm not liking that. So far this month, 25 analysts have downgraded earnings estimates. Three have kept them flat, and only four have increased them. So I don't like the earnings trends here. If I go look at the chart, once again, it is hitting this 230 level. It's much more reasonably priced now than it was, but it's not at a level quite yet where I'm getting excited about it, right? If there's no growth, well, I'm going to pay low teens maybe, multiple going forward. If that, okay, so if it earns $14 again, what are you going to pay? Maybe 175, 200 in that range. That's where I would maybe be interested in it again. But I still don't love it. I don't like the technicals. I don't like the broader trends in the name. And so I would pass on Lululemon. I'm still watching it, but I'm not liking what I'm seeing at the current moment. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. So get your questions in right now. We're ready for whatever's on your mind, and I'd love to hear your questions as we close out this hour. And don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. We have merch now. InvestTalk merch. Hats, sweatshirts, t-shirts, polos, etc. So head over to investtalkstore.com and grab yours.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. Matt from Minneapolis calling here, a longtime listener here. I currently own XHB, and it hasn't done much at all over the last couple of years for me. I'm considering dropping it, and what I'm looking at is a Vanguard coin-based ETF that I've led to believe, besides just Bitcoin and that, it has lots of stocks and good quality ones in it. So I'm considering buying some of that. What are your thoughts and opinions of getting into an ETF that concerns Coinbase? Thanks. I'll be listening on the line.
Okay. I would love to know what Vanguard Coinbase ETF. I'm not... That's my issue is I don't know exactly which ETF you are talking about. Now, one question would be really around what type of exposure you already have to crypto, to Bitcoin, etc. Now, XHB is certainly struggling for, you know, good reason. It certainly is dealing with the higher interest rates. We just talked earlier in the day about how new home sales surprised the downside. And, you know, one issue with XHB is that it's not just home builders. If you buy ITB, that's just home builders, but XHB has home builders along with, you know, names that supply home builders. I believe names like Home Depot are in there, etc. So it's a bit broader. You might want that, you might not. But the kind of the point here is that, yeah, I don't see this as a bullish place to be in the shorter term. Now, crypto is, I think, has some longer term tailwinds, but it's certainly high risk. And I say that because it's highly driven by liquidity. And right now we're in a fairly abundant liquidity environment, although that is likely to slow in the back half of the year. So I'm not very bullish on Bitcoin, say, end of third quarter and into next year. Near term, I think it can be okay. I think it could maybe even head up to 120, 130, potentially. But what is interesting to me is that it's kind of lost its momentum, right? It's moved up to around over $100 per coin in May. And it's been just dropping sideways for the past 2 months and not really breaking out to the upside when it was just should, right? It's making new highs and should clear the resistance and really, really break out. It's not really doing that. So I don't get excited about buying here because I think you want to be accumulating Bitcoin when it has its winter. Well, you know, and it always has that. It always has its 60, 70, 80% drop from its highs. Now that high could be higher than it is here. But the point is, most likely the next Bitcoin winter will drop Bitcoin well below where it is sitting today. And I would rather accumulate during those periods as opposed to right now, which is, you know, kind of neutral to bullish in the short term. So frankly, I don't get excited about either one of these. I think there's better opportunities elsewhere. I would just keep looking, frankly, for names that give you better exposure to sectors that are much stronger. I think industrials continue to do very well. Parts of the technology area continue to do well. You have consumer defensive, consumer staples. There are pockets there that continue to do well. Financial services with a steepening yield curve. I think those areas are seeing some tailwinds. And then harder assets, basic materials, parts of the energy space, talked about natural gas, et cetera. I just think there are a lot of other opportunities out there in the short to medium and long term that I would rather pick up right now. Okay. Thanks for the call. And lastly, let's talk a bit about, oh, never mind. We don't have time. I wish I had time. I'm going to save my topics for tomorrow. That about does it. I'm Justin Klein. It's another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And if anything about today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, retirement planning, right? Think of Social Security planning, Roth conversions, healthcare expenses. What about your will and trust, etc.? All these things are what we help our clients with. Navigate these environments, not just the investment side. Certainly that's heavier part of our lifting, but it's not the only thing that we do for clients as well. So if you need help with any of it, just schedule a no-cost portfolio review with me or Luke by heading over to investtalk.com. Click on the portfolio review button. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, It's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.